All right, what is up, good citizens of Crypt Nation? I hope you guys are having just a delightful morning, noon, and or night. Wherever you are in the world, you just got to know you're in the right place. Pizza Mind, how are you feeling, man? Things good in your life?
You know, I'm a little paranoid right now. I had a really weird dream last night that Jack O'Halloran from Scale Labs was chasing me and I couldn't escape. Anyway, back to reality. How's everything going? Who do we have on the show today?
Oh, well, funny you should mention that. Jack O'Halloran from Scale Labs, CEO and founder. Welcome to the show, my man.
Ah!
So Pizza Mind, were you running uphill or running in sand as I was like gaining ground chasing you?
I was actually, I had a sledgehammer and I was breaking rocks open and, there is just an endless amount of rocks, and I had to think there's got to be a better way to break off this mountain and scale up what I was doing.
Oh, you're prepared awesome. Today, aren't you, Pizza Mind?
I've
had some caffeine.
I'm envisioning Link smashing rocks and finding gemstones inside of them for the Zelda fans out there.
Exactly. I was looking for pepperoni, though, and I just kept hearing your laugh in the distance. Scale faster, work harder.
So, Jack, thank you so much. I know you got a busy day here, and we won't keep you too long. So, first off, thanks for joining the show. We're big fans of the stuff that you guys are doing over at Scale.
Thank you. Hey, thank you for having me. Really a pleasure to be here and to speak to this amazing community.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun. And let's just jump in. I mean, before we even get started with Scale Labs, I mean, a lot of the times people are listening to Crypto 101 podcast and it's their first time ever hearing about crypto. So what would you say to new people that are just now learning about crypto? Like, how do you explain it to them? Because a lot of people are like, you know, I understand stocks or bonds, but you know, when I buy crypto, what am I really getting? Like, how do you explain that to people?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's one I find myself always trying to find the right balance, because this is a very technical topic, but it can be explained in very simple terms as well. So let me take a cut at describing that. And my goal, by the way, if you've ever read the book Thing Explainer, it's a phenomenal book. There's only 1,000 words used in the entire book and trying to describe incredibly complex topics. And it forces you to speak specifically and try not to use jargon. So I'm going to try to do that. So
I love that. I'm actually going to write that book down right now. It's called Thing Explainer.
Thing Explainer. Yeah. Check it out. You, especially if you guys, I think you'd appreciate it. So
amazing.
It's a really good book. So, all right. So let's first talk about a blockchain. What is a blockchain? I think it's absolutely critical to understand what this is. And I'm going to use, again, basic terms. And instead of using the word node, I'll just use the word computer. And so what happens is there's a series of computers. So let's say, you know, there's 10 of us and we each have a computer. Let's say there's 100. We all have a computer. Our computer has a specific software program that we all can see to ensure we're running the same code and the same program. So that's number one. That's why we have open source as a big initiative around blockchain. So we all know we're running the same software. What that software does is it keeps the same record. And so if I have one Scale token or Bitcoin or whatever, and you know, you have one and we all have one, then I spend one and Pizza Mind spends one and you have three. Well, the system, each time that happens, has to update. And the way we maintain accuracy in this digital environment is that we need to have a certain percentage of the computers have the same record. And if over 51% have the same record, then we can continue forward in a proof of work system. If over 2/3 have the same record, that's kind of, you know, even more secure in some ways. But that would be like a lot of proof of stake have a different mechanism called a consensus. What happens is the computers are able to speak to each other and all ensure that they have the same record. And if you have the same record, what that means is you can keep an actual currency running digitally. But it's very reliant on a few things. And one of those things is that you know, there's a consensus where a majority is agreeing to the record. And so it's actually, that's pretty simple, right? We all have a bunch of computers and they run the same software. It keeps track of a currency and a record of the currency of who owns what. And that's really in a nutshell. But what gets more complicated and more sophisticated is when you think of where that could be utilized. So we could have a different currency that wants it, that could be a new world currency, such as a Bitcoin or, you know, a US denominated currency that is all running, and we can replace or a gold-backed currency or ETH-backed currency, whatever it is. We have new ways of using money. The other thing that happens is when we can create systems like this, we can also code dynamics that are more broad, that are not just about money, but are about rules and structure of the way the system and the money need to work together. And that's when we can start creating even new business models and different types of business entities. And what happens is everybody, you know, can, the code is law, and you can code up new models. And that's where we get all this fun, exciting stuff that's coming from the Ethereum community with dApps and decentralized applications. And, you know, it's money that's being programmed that integrates and interacts with sets of rules. So, and by the way, I can also segue how this into why these things can be slow and how scale operates too in the same framework. But I'll just stop and, you know, guys, please weigh in and
I think before we get into that, and we definitely will get into that, some of the bottlenecks that are currently there. I mean, do you think that a currency like Bitcoin, which, you know, is looking to replace maybe gold, for instance, do you think that something like that could actually, in the cryptocurrency ecosystem in general, could replace banks?
You know what? I think they are going to replace components of banks. Banks provide a lot of value for different reasons, and so will different digital assets. And I think we're going to see hybrids evolve, and we are not going to see a complete dismantling of the banking infrastructure, because there's a lot of good, positive things that come from that. But we're going to see banks get more integrated to crypto, and you're going to see crypto disrupt and dismantle more of these unfair banking practices and things that frankly don't provide value to society. One of the huge advantages of blockchains and decentralized infrastructure and cryptocurrencies are you can replace middlemen in environments that are taking more than their fair share. And it's an absolute disruption mechanism that will ultimately result in more fair and equitable systems. And I like to use the word democratized business. And you can really democratize businesses and make them more community owned. And that's what we're going to find when it comes to banking evolution, in my opinion.
What are some of those like unfair banking practices that, you know, the general public is being exposed to that we don't really even think about on a day-to-day basis?
Well, so one thing would just be around lending. So if anyone's ever bought a home or done a HELOC for some construction or got an auto loan, so you're buying it, there's a whole system that's in place, and there's a whole set of middlemen that go up and down the ladder. And the amount you pay out, if you were just, you know, if we as a community were lending and borrowing with each other directly, it would be far less expensive. And the other thing is what happens too, as we all saw in 2008, and this, you know, this is very macro, but there's lending and lending and lending and lending and lending, right? And it actually is integrated even to how we inflate currency, is when someone buys a home and a bank issues a loan, then that even is integrated to inflation. And what happens eventually, like Fannie and Freddie end up owning the loan, and it just gets bought down the line. So I'm not going to go too deep into that, but really what it comes down to is, you know, hey, like look at what people are doing with Compound and decentralized finance systems and Maker, where they're actually new lending vehicles that anybody can show up. And as long as you like are KYCing in that you're and doing AML to ensure you're not doing money laundering and you're doing it legally, you can show up and get loans from the community. And it's pretty cool.
So what are the biggest pain points in crypto right now? It really feels like we're not quite ready to bring in a ton of users. For instance, the loan system we have here in crypto is all collateralized. You don't get something unless you have something already. What are some of the ways that crypto and blockchain need to evolve before everyone can participate?
Yeah. So one of you know, and I'll kind of like fold back into usability and user experience. So one piece is the UX has been just abysmal. And hey, it's been for the sake of security, we've kind of needed to have the certain guardrails and structure around entry and ownership and validation of identity and storing keys, because this is new terrain. But we're quickly seeing infrastructure grow to support usability on both the end user front end perspective, as well as the back end, in making transactions cost less, removing gas fees, making block times sub-seconds. And so those things are dramatically improving. And then I think as we get more and more users and more volume and more currency into the system, we can then have even more friendly financial terms, that less collateral is required, et cetera, as volume grows and frequency grows. But happy to kind of dig in more too on those points.
You know, one of the things that I've always been interested in, I mean, actually, before we dive into the technical stuff, is I always like learning about, I mean, we get to talk to CEOs all day, and I always like to hear about their different strategies for, you know, managing their companies, for raising capital. I mean, you guys raised money from, you know, the Winklevoss twins and Mike Novogratz's Galaxy and Simon's Hashed and Arrington XRB. Like, these are all guys that everybody knows. And, you know, I guess first off, like, how do you strategize around raising? Like, how do you figure out what your valuation is going to be and who you want to get money from and all that stuff?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So, and it, I think it also brings up one of just these truisms of the space that is even like semi-controversial, is guess what? At the end of the day, this is all just software. And software, even if it's a decentralized project, requires at some point a set of humans to gather around the idea and the concept and build an initiative with the goal and a plan. And you know, I've been doing tech startups since 2005, have been a part of a number of successful startups and have started many myself and raised a lot of financing in the process. So thankfully had just, you know, knew how to do it from my prior work experience doing machine learning startups and mobile startups and security startups, and had learned some things along the way, but also say this is a new industry. So I also had to learn new things and unlearn old things in order for us to effectively raise our financing. So one, we had a good plan, but two, we had to build traction and we had to bring data points and to say, hey, here's what we're looking to do. Here's our plan. Here's our traction thus far. Here's how we're executing against the plan. Here's the code. Here's the customer traction. Here's the, you know, market validation from validators. So we were able to, you know, thankfully execute on the plan. And it's one of, you know, I've just been, you know, I can get into more of the details later, but we also just, I have to say, I'm really thankful to have such a phenomenal team around me too. As the CEO has to go raise the money, but it's really difficult. You can't do that without a world-class team.
And to follow up on that, I mean, this is the golden question right now that everyone in the space that listens to our podcast is, you know, you stop what you're doing, you know, have your temp, you know, hold your calls. How do you create a business plan on blockchain and crypto that actually makes a sustainable, profitable business?
Yeah, that's a really, really great point. So, you know, that is what lured me and attracted me to the industry, is I realized, you know, hey, I had just started and built up a very successful advanced analytics SaaS platform. So almost every pharma rep and biotech rep in the world is guided by this platform. It's called Octana. And, you know, had a ton of options to go start something else in, you know, doing machine learning and AI, which is a really hot space. But what really intrigued me about decentralized business models in crypto is that you can create an economic structure that creates a ton of good for your users and brings them the value at a far lower cost and shares value with another side of a marketplace. And you can do all of this, do good for society, have an incredibly transparent, open platform, and have a phenomenally successful business model, because when your business model is based around token appreciation and there's a real need and utility to your token and your token's programmable into your network, what it means is, you know, instead of us at scale, taking 30 to 50% margin every year, like Amazon does or other infrastructure players in tech, you know, you just take 30% or 20% or some fraction up front because you're getting a component of the currency. And you know, that component has to, you know, vest over a long period of time. The foundation has a 7-year vest schedule, for example, at scale. But if we can make the scale token valuable, then it's a phenomenally successful business venture for the investors and the participants working to create the network. And instead of people that, you know, get access to the tech infrastructure, instead of them paying like an exorbitant margin every year, they're getting at a dramatically lower cost, and they're just having to deal with a little inflationary component from some tokens being minted at the beginning.
That sounds really awesome. You know, I was on an airplane for about 25 hours yesterday, and I was thinking to myself about research and development and how I could just become interested in something like maglev or magnetic levitation, you know, to try and change the way flight technology works. And I could go to the US government and publish a one paper a year, you know, just kind of pull it out of my ass. I don't know anything about maglev. And, you know, just be funded for life pretty much. But turning that into a usable product that actually impacts the world and a business that turns a profit is so much harder. And I think we see a lot of that in crypto and blockchain these days, where a lot of people just get very, very excited about getting research and development funding and then just kind of have a good life, but don't really put out anything that is ever really used. So what is a scale putting out that really can impact the world and be very useful as well as turn a profit?
Yeah. And hey, I'm going to address that in two pieces. So one, let me just like directly respond to like the market dynamic. You're so right. There's so many people that basically got R&D funded, and I don't know how much they're paying themselves. I don't know where this money is going. There's a lack of transparency. And, you know, but the reality is, I think a lot of this happens in boom industries and growth phases. It happened with the internet in the 90s. So it's not completely new. But what we're also seeing is the same thing that happened in the early 2000s is that, one, there's a delayering of investors. A lot of the investors and the VCs don't have the same they don't have the same assets now, and they that they had before, and they haven't been able to raise subsequent funds from the LPs. And then the other piece is that projects that haven't performed and hit milestones are not able to raise the second tranche of financing. Okay, so what we're seeing here in this, you know, we're going to see continually more and more projects. I haven't seen the data, but the amount of projects that have gotten funding the second half of this year is dramatically lower than the first half of the prior year. And there, and what it's going to come down to is you need to produce results. You need to be building something of value. What scale does is decentralized architecture. So if I want to run a decentralized application, I need access to blockchain infrastructure. Okay. And that means I need to be able to run consensus. I need to run a blockchain. I need to do file storage in a decentralized manner. I need to be able to execute smart contracts on Ethereum, like such as smart contracts that happen on Ethereum. That's where we basically have these escrows that hold the money until something happens. And then the blockchain certifies that it's all accurate and the money should pass through. And you need to be able to carry and manage state. So, and be able to message that back and forth in a way that users can use a system. So scale, let's say someone's building a decentralized application that has cryptocurrency integrated, and there's a smart contract that says, you know, if Pizza Mind beats Bryce, you know, has to give up his sword. And, you know, then
damn that, right.
That, yeah. And so that then comes and lives basically in a back-end database and is executed in scale. And then it speaks back and forth to Ethereum. So if we're playing a normal game, guess what? It goes and pings the Amazon server or Google Cloud or something else, right? And it hits a centralized database. So scale provides utility to developers who need to run decentralized applications for many different types of businesses. And we have 32 decentralized applications already signed up and working within the Scale Innovator Program. And there are over 100 that are waiting and have applied to get in that we'll be opening up the doors and letting them in as soon as we have the bandwidth to support them effectively.
So this is infrastructure that's not just for developers or, you know, system engineers, but this is something that if you're a real estate broker or a small business owner that wants to leverage blockchain technology, they could just contact you guys and you would help them out by providing that.
Well, so they would have to have a developer be able to code that up. But really, if they wanted to use a real estate agent, wanted to use a real estate oriented blockchain application that's on Ethereum, the developer then is designing it so that it connects to Scale. And then when they get access to that system, they can use Scale and they don't even need to know they're using it. So just like all of us today, everybody on this phone, everyone listening on this call has interacted with Docker and, you know, probably Google Cloud and probably Amazon, you know, Elastic Compute Cloud. And, you know, we're interacting with infrastructure constantly. We just don't know. And for us to be successful in blockchain, we need to be able to make the same thing happen. My goal is so that no real estate agent who uses Scale ever knows they use it. They just interact with the application.
That's amazing. And so what is really like the main bottleneck for scaling right now?
Yeah, great question. So let's go back to this very simple analogy and description where let's say we have 100 computers, right? And each computer, and you know, in the blockchain world, we'd say these are all nodes. Each computer is running a role in the blockchain. And what happens is 100 computers, for them to talk and come to an agreement, it takes a while. And they also have to keep carrying the weight, the data that's inside that is the record and the history. And so let's say instead of 100, we have 10,000 or 100,000 computers, and they all have to wait to come to agreement. And what that means is the more and more that come to agreement, it means the more and more secure the system is. And if it's a currency, that can be really valuable, because if it's our digital gold, well, hey, guess what? It's going to take a lot of effort to get 51% of them to turn bad, and or 67% in what's called a, you know, Byzantine fault tolerant consensus model. So what's happening though is as it gets more secure, it gets slower and more expensive to run, because we just need more and more and more and more machines that all have to agree. Imagine if 100 everybody in San Francisco had to say agree to something really quickly. It takes a while, and it's like a heavy workload. So what Scale does, and this is how Scale helps to solve for that, is let's say we have these 100 computers again. Well, randomly at any given time, 10 of them are assigned to go work for, you know, you as a developer. I'm the real estate dApp, and the developer using it says, hey, I want a Scale chain. Well, in a random fashion, 10 of them are selected of the 100, and only those 10 run the blockchain and carry the state and have to communicate. So it's just inherently faster because there's less. But what we do is we make sure that those 10 are consistently rotated, and we randomly select those 10. And the other thing is, the reality is we're going to have a much bigger pool than 100. We want to have, you know, thousands and thousands of these someday. And the bigger the pool, the harder it is to ensure that you have, you know, over 2/3 on any single individual chain. And so we randomly select them. The computers that manage the state that are running the blockchain for the developer are rotated, and they have an incentive. They all put in like $100,000 worth of Scale tokens. And if they act bad and they try to steal the money, guess what? You lose that stake. It's called a stake. And it aligns incentives of the people running the nodes, and they're also like effectively mining, or it's called validating in a proof of stake world, where they get tokens by doing the work. And this model then ensures we can have speed and a lightweight execution in conjunction with lower cost. And then ultimately this Scale system and your 10 computers that sits in one room will speak back to another network like Ethereum or Bitcoin, and keep sharing updates consistently. And so you can pair speed and security together in an optimal way. And that's how Scale supports the scalability problem.
eToro is one of the largest trading platforms in the world, with over $1 trillion in trading volume on the platform every year. And they're some of our good friends, and they're a great sponsor. U.S. customers can trade the most popular crypto assets, and your fees are extremely transparent. So if you're not ready to trade yet, you could also practice building your portfolio with the eToro virtual trading feature. They give you $100,000 of virtual money, and you could start playing around with it and not have to risk any of your real money before you get comfortable with the markets. And best of all, you can connect with 12 million other eToro traders around the world, kind of like a social network for trading, to discuss charts and all things crypto. So go ahead, create an account today at eToro.com/crypto101. That helps us, that helps you, that helps them, and makes everything possible here if you guys use that link. So guys, start building your portfolio the smart way. eToro is crypto trading made easy. All right, back to the show.
So in our first conversation a couple of weeks ago, you had such an awesome analogy about like mobile apps in 2006 and basically kind of trying to draw this parallel between like, how did the internet scale? You know, back in the early days, nobody could have imagined sending 8K VR tech, video files through the internet, right? Because it didn't scale to that, but eventually scaling got to that point. So can you kind of walk us through how like the internet scaled and that analogy that you were talking about with the mobile apps?
Yeah, great. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. So one, one of the amazing things about the crypto space and blockchain is that there's so many people that care, and it also shines a bright light on what is just really a traditional tech growth and tech evolution. So when I was working in mobile in 2005, I would literally have to talk to CIOs to say, give valued propositions and ROI models on just letting people use email outside of the office and having a mobile phone. And and we hit this inflection point in 2006 where everybody had a BlackBerry or a Palm Treo or whatever mobile device, a Windows device, a Nokia device. And it was just commonplace. All of a sudden, I had to talk about like all the reasons why our product, why Good was better than RIM and all the, and it became a different conversation and it spiked. But still, email was the only killer app. There was nothing else really that was viable. Even looking up sports scores on ESPN was slow, tedious. If anybody listening remembers those days on a 2G network. And so Good, we launched this big, app platform, and we were going to get all the enterprises were using it. And we thought we'd have people lining up around the block to, launch their applications in mobile and use and connect to Good. But only a handful were really there, really trying to do that because the user experience wasn't there. And the issue was we had poor battery life. We had low memory on devices. We had bad network speeds. There was a whole confluence of factors that made the user experience really bad. But instead of like millions of people saying, what's going on? Where's the industry? Like we have in crypto, it was like a lot less. And, people like me were pulling our hair out being like, let's get this going. But hey, sure enough, like all of these things were fixed and improved and in their own buckets. And this confluence of factors came together and boom, we had the iPhone launched and the network speeds improved and other products launched and Android launched soon after. And then you have a million people in real time playing each other in online, simultaneous games like on Supercell and people across the world competing and like in night and day difference, right? And we all saw what happened with mobile. So I just see the same thing happening. And what I tell people is like, hey, just relax, sit back and watch a show. We're close. I see all these improvements being made in each of the categories that are, that are unique to crypto. And I'm feeling very confident about the tech and where things are going. And we're going to start really seeing the value to friction ratio change.
One of the other things that you were talking about was this decentralized search engine on Scale, kind of like a decentralized Google. And there's some shared upside as well. So can you go into that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So let me give like a short-term example, because I think flow of conversation is, well, what's going to happen tomorrow? Like, or in 6 months, like, what are we going to see happening. So one, just the short-term thing, the gaming industry is just going to be so integrated with crypto in the next year. And we're going to see games and different applications such as, that are similar integrate crypto, and end users aren't even going to know. And you know, I think this is going to happen. This is happening across DeFi. This is happening in other areas. And these are things that are not like incredibly complicated in terms, and they make a ton of sense in terms of integrating a cryptocurrency. But really what the big picture where we're going, and something like you asked for, you know, what's something amazing that could be built on scale? Well, if you think about decentralized entities, I mentioned earlier that groups of people essentially can come to agreement on frameworks and rules of how the system will operate and how payments are made and really who does the work. So instead of paying, if this were like an Uber, right? Instead of having a central group called Uber, they would just be the central software that the community runs, and people get paid to run the software, riders get paid to drive people, or drivers get paid to drive people, and riders would pay to access the system. And then instead of it going to a middleman, it goes just, flows through the community as it's designed to flow. And you've disintermediated somebody who prior took 30% of every ride. So now let's go to like a super big picture view is, I said, a search engine. So Google, a competitor to Google, could run entirely on scale and connect with Ethereum as well. You could run an entire search engine. Google makes 110 plus billion in revenue a year off of us using search and looking at ads. And that money goes to Google. And instead, what would happen is if we all agreed to a new model and all use the shared ecosystem and open ecosystem, anybody who's watching ads could opt in to watch them. And then people that run the servers get paid. And even the users and those of us watching ads are getting dividends back through the system. And so what we've done is we can remove these huge incumbent players because we're changing the way profits flow and we're democratizing business models. And the reality is the big players can't compete with that because they have profit motives and profit initiatives and growth requirements from Wall Street. And so that's when the stuff gets super exciting. And we start, but it's just going to take a while. It's going to be, that's a 5 or 10 year journey to start seeing like major systems we use every day turn it into decentralized community run assets.
Yes.
Remember Windows 98?
Mm-hmm.
So Clippy. Yeah. It was obviously not the best product out there, but it became what was most widely used. Everyone who's listening on this podcast right now is nodding their heads. Yeah, I remember that. I had to reboot twice a day. It could not scale. It was a terrible use of resources. And that got me thinking about Ethereum. While it's kind of like Windows 98, but for blockchain. However, you decided to build scale on Ethereum instead of EOS or Komodo. Why did you make that choice? And what do you see for the future of Ethereum?
Yeah, so I'll use another Microsoft analogy. So a lot of people don't realize we all use Microsoft OS because Microsoft won the developer war. They invented B2D marketing, which is business to developer marketing. And I think everyone's seen Steve Ballmer's thing when he's like sweating profusely and saying, developers, developers, developers on stage. Well, they made developers successful. And therefore, they ended up owning the operating systems and coding languages. And that's why we use Microsoft. Now, Ethereum is winning the developer battle. And not just by a little bit, but by a landslide. Like, it's unbelievable what's happening in the Ethereum ecosystem. And scale, we're a part of that. We really feel we're a part of this Ethereum movement. There are a lot of other projects that are working as well in the movement. And Ethereum is going to win, I think, because Ethereum is an ecosystem. It's not just an asset of ETH and it's not a company. It's really a large group of people banding together around, goals and a set of values of just kind of doing the right thing and building and really delivering. And it's not about making short-term money, which is different than from, some other ecosystems. So it's just by sheer volume of devs that we'll see the ETH ecosystem. And so you can think of Scale as being an integrated component of the Ethereum ecosystem. And anyone can get a small version of Ethereum or a big version, but it's on the side. And it's like there's two highways, and one is jammed with people, and it's like really secure, and to the extent it's like not that usable. And then Scale is this super highway. It's the express lane that goes right next to it. And, you know, developers can pay more and, you know, go to the express lane and have great service. And these two things operate in tandem. We also can say, hey, you like Bitcoin? Well, guess what? You can run Bitcoin in the Ethereum developer ecosystem, because Scale has a way to plug that in and basically clone it, and it runs in the Scale network. Or, you know, if Libra or other assets ever launch that are valuable, they could also run the Ethereum ecosystem by being brought into a Scale chain.
You know, what are some other ecosystems that you think are going to rise to prominence besides Ethereum?
You know, that is it's a phenomenal question. And one of the questions that's being asked by people are, do the same rules around power laws exist? Are we going to see a complete monopoly like we do with search engines? Or is it going to be kind of like what we're seeing with ride sharing, where there's like 75% for the winner, 25% for second place, no one in third place? So is it going to be like a lot of power laws say that the winner gets 99% of the market share? You know, I don't know what's going to happen. I think there's some people building very cool things that are outside of the Ethereum ecosystem, but I'll just tell you, if developers are going to select the winner of the ecosystem, then really I see anyone not participating in the Ethereum ecosystem putting themselves at serious business risk because of the inertia of where the devs are. And that's played true in every prior ecosystem platform play. And we saw it with Apple, we saw it with Twilio, we saw it with Android. You just see people that win the developer ecosystems end up dominating categories that are technical.
That's such an important point. And actually, that exact point hasn't been brought up on the show yet. So I appreciate that insight. And, you know, it's funny because I heard Joe Lubin, it wasn't during a speech, but I read something that he said that he wants to have 1 million developers actively working on Ethereum by the end of 2020. And it's just like, whoa, that just goes to show the scale, no pun intended, of what they're trying to accomplish over at the Ethereum Foundation. And I'm super bullish on Ethereum. I love it. I see the same stuff. I see no matter what conference you go into, everybody's building on it. Everybody's talking about it. So that's some good insight.
One small example, and I'll tie that into Joe's comment. And I've gotten to know Joe pretty well over the last year. He's a really brilliant, brilliant person. And I think he definitely sees, he's been around the block. He knows how these things work, and he's got some really great points. And I don't think that's an outlandish goal. And the reason why is we can't expect 1 million developers to get to know Solidity. Solidity is the programming language of Ethereum to program smart contracts. But what's happening with Ethereum is that there's so much effort. There's more people working on making Ethereum extensible to other devs that just know JavaScript and other coding languages to leverage smart contracts in a secure, kind of standardized way, that you're going to see the Ethereum ecosystem lend itself to developers even outside of this Solidity language. And that's where you get scale, because all of a sudden, millions of developers who know other languages can use Ethereum and not have to worry about breaking cryptography and needing to have a math expert on the team. And so these are very common growth trends too that we see in tech, where you start abstracting away complexity and you make difficult things easy and usable. And it even happens for developers.
Interesting. I like that point. And you know, kind of before we move on past the technology section, I kind of want to get your quick high level feelings towards Tezos's approach. You know, could you kind of just break down what they're doing and like why you do or don't like what they're doing?
You know what? I will just say I know some people that have invested. I know they've done a really good job building a validator community, or baker community is what they call it. And you know, they're not, I'm not seeing them get a ton of traction on the developer side and like, and dApp side, because there's a lot of unknowns and risks. But I think they are doing a good job just fundamentally getting people up and running and getting the blockchain run. But if you look at the blocks, they're not full of business transactions and, you know, escrow is being executed upon. So, but hey, I think it's a smart team and I've heard good things about them. I know they're trying to do some accelerator type grant programs to try to spark their industry and growth in their industry. But it's a very different set of community. And maybe Tezos is going to find a niche in a different category that, you know, that it is less, you know, developer focused, as we saw like Microsoft get dominance. And that's where I said, I don't know how the power laws are going to work. I think we're all just kind of in, you know, waiting and watching to see how these things unfold. But, you know, either they're going to be left, with like absolutely zero value if all they ever get are just, you know, rich people that buy tokens and, you know, people that are like running, you know, frankly, just lighting up Tezos servers on Amazon. It's,
yeah, right.
And, you know, they've got to get utility. But again, maybe there's a currency component or a decentralized finance component that they figure out and they can own a piece of the market. So I think the market's going to be massive. And I think if they execute well, they could do well.
As you mentioned earlier, usually the winner gets like 99% or maybe 75%. For some reason, I think crypto ecosystems are going to be a little more decentralized because the mentality is to maintain decentralization from the start. I think the word for 2020 is going to be interoperability, meaning mm-hmm. people can work between ecosystems. But I think ecosystem itself is going to be the word for maybe crypto in crypto for maybe 2021 or 2022, as these ecosystems really become mature. And like Bryce was mentioning in another episode, more like digital nation states. And this mm-hmm. tribalism that, you know, we're trying to fight against is probably going to come back in a huge wave. And you really can subscribe and have your entire life revolve around these digital identities and name services and applications that are built on these individual ecosystems. So it should be really, really interesting to see what's going to be happening in the next 3 years. I know you talked about Ethereum and how great it's going to be, but what is one company that you think is going to have the greatest impact on crypto space besides Ethereum?
Yeah, I mean, I'm biased, but I think it's going to be Scale. So, my belief and my goal is to support all of these developers building on Ethereum. And if you think about it, Scale brings each one of them architecture that they need to run gasless fast transactions and smart contracts. So I'd love to see Scale operating in every single instance of Ethereum. And it's, again, like a lot of people don't recognize the power and the impact that Docker and has had, and or Kubernetes open source project. And you know, you can almost see Scale having a similar type powerful impact that every single developer interacts with every single day. And it's so that's I'm excited about what we're doing. So so that would be my answer. And I also would just say, I think you're really right about, you know, you hit the pizza on the head, and we don't know how things are going to unfold in crypto with power laws, because decentralization is a core value, and it's a different model. It's not, but it'll be. I'm curious, as somebody who studies these things as part of my job of starting companies. I don't have the answer, and I'm waiting. I'm glad we all have a front row seat to the show.
Absolutely. I really wish, you know, we had more time and could have a big whiteboard session and draw all over the walls and see what are going to be maybe the biggest 10 ecosystems 5 years down the road. First of all, who's going to exist? And second, what they might look like. But we don't have that kind of time, unfortunately. Not today. Maybe in the next episode. There's a couple further questions we want to ask before we let you go. And my pizza delivery guy arrives. So who's one person you really admire in the crypto space?
Yeah. So, you know, that's a really, really great question. I would just say there are you know, I won't put a name on this person because there's a lot of these people, but you go to these hackathons and it's the like women and men that are staying up till, you know, 36 hours over the weekend, just hacking and building on decentralized networks because they love it and they believe it. So like, you know, whoever this, you know, this, it's not somebody who's getting podcast spotlight. They're not getting write-ups. Like, they're just there for the love of the game and they believe in this and they are learning to build. And those are the people that are going to really carry the industry on their shoulders and take the industry to the next level. And there's a lot of them and they're kind of the unsung heroes. So that's my, you know, who would I would say otherwise, like, you know, obviously, Satoshi or, Vitalik or someone, but, you know, it's the unsung heroes who I have the most respect for.
The hackathon heroes. This one's to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Jack, thank you so much for spending an hour with us this afternoon. Really can't thank you enough. And we're excited to keep tabs on everything that you guys are doing over at Scale Labs. And we wish you all the success in the world because your success is actually going to be all of our success.
Thank you. Hey, it's awesome talking to you guys. You guys are smart and fun. And thanks for just introducing and educating the people here because we all need it. This is a complex topic.
Absolutely. You are doing the Lord's work over there for all of us holders of ETH. Let me just
gasless
say that.
Gasless ETH transactions. Amazing.
All right. You take care and we'll see you soon, my man.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you.
See ya.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.